Letters to Lelia, by Frances Rosenfeld. Chapter 10, Cherishing Your Gift. Sister Therese, can we count on you to perform at the joyous celebration? The Wisps seem to be fascinated with music, especially vocal music. I often wonder if this isn't the only reason they agreed to communicate with us. That and the Immortals nagging, those purple chatterboxes can talk you to death when they want something, Lily asked, skipping the introductory chit-chat. I was planning on it, of course. Do you have anything specific in mind? Therese answered. Purple wrote a story for Lelia. Can you take a look at it? Lily handed the sister the score, without waiting for agreement. Sister Therese looked over the pages and the expression on her face silently painted the story. Lily read inner peace, puzzlement and glee, while the sister skimmed through the piece until she reached the end. Would somebody tell Purple we're not dolphins? Some of these frequencies are outside the audible range, she mentioned, chuckling a little. Other than that, it's fine. Maybe they could tone down the high notes a little bit. I don't want to sound labored.
Easy. 4. Giant. 2. Ask. Giant. Try. Speak. Without. Conjunctions. Or. Nouns. Wisp. Write. Giant. Dense.
The Immortals protested through the interlink. Make the edits. I'll take them to Sis and she'll fix the piece, Lily replied. You know, sister, you have an extraordinary voice, she offered in an attempt to smooth out Purple's abrasive remarks. How come you never considered singing as your vocation?
I have, dear. It just wasn't for me. There is a lot more to playing to an audience than having a beautiful voice. Large crowds intimidate me.
Great performers become energized, they connect with their listeners, blend their emotions with theirs. That's how you touch people's hearts.
So, you're saying you're going to feel awkward singing in front of hundreds of beings? Lily asked, just to be polite. She really didn't care about Sister Therese's performance anxiety.
Not so much, I know most of you, the latter replied. It's going to be an informal setting. Anyway, we were thinking about Sarah's healing garden. Have you tested the acoustics?
Sister Therese asked. What acoustics? It's outdoors?
Lily asked, confused. Stone benches, stone facade, stone wall. Did anybody consider the reverberation times? The sister continued. We may need to add resonant boards to clean up the sound.
I'll have someone do a sound check. Lily took notice.
The pavers are not going to be a problem. We're going to assume the garden will be filled to capacity, Sister Therese continued thinking out loud.
Okay, Lily agreed, not wanting to sound clueless. She hadn't thought through all the details of the performance. Who is doing the accompanying? This looks like a symphonic piece.
Sister Therese asked.
The string orchestra is going to be there, Lily said.
There where?
There is barely any room for the guests. We're going to use part of the garden, Sarah already agreed.
Are you going to move the gardenia bushes?
No,
it's not going to work. I don't think it's reasonable to ask the violinist to play perched in shrubs like birds, Sister Therese protested.
There isn't enough room in the garden. How about the beach?
Do you think the acoustics are going to be better there?
Lily disagreed.
No, but we'll have enough space. We're going to have to manage the sound anyway.
Who is we?
How about Sis and Roberta? It will keep Roberta busy until the ceremony. I think one surprise show is enough, Therese suggested.
Lily sighed again. Ever since the preparations for the blessed event had started, she sighed more than she spoke.
I'll talk to her. What else do you need?
I assume somebody will manage the lighting? Sister Therese mentioned. That will also be Sis and Roberta, Lily decided.
Purple. Light. Ocean. Floor. Wisp. Like.
The Immortals proposed.
Beautiful. Decor.
Thank you. That's a wonderful idea, Lily replied.
Giant. Sing. Loud. Purple. Here.
I'm sure that won't be a problem, Sister Therese assured them. Of course we're going to have to figure out the seating. We can't expect people to stand for almost an hour, she continued, turning to Lily.
That's why we're having this conversation. See how many details need to be figured out?
People think events organize themselves.
Lily replied, vexed. It's going to be a beautiful ceremony, Sister Therese volunteered immediately, to shift to a less contentious subject.
Lily shuffled through the notes and schedules and tensed up again.
This is impossible. The logistics alone, we're going to spend the entire time moving stuff around. This is why I wanted to start planning way in advance, so we don't run into situations like these. She went on, increasingly annoyed.
Nothing is impossible, you know that, Sister Therese mollified her.
Sis will take care of it.
We need to provide a diversion while the decor changes. It's going to be too distracting. The Wisps get aggravated by our normal routine, This will work them into a frenzy, Lily fretted. By that time it's already going to be dark and everybody is going to be watching Sister Roberta's light and sound surprise, Sister Therese explained. I just realized that the dragons are going to be laying around the stage in circle formation, most likely asleep at that time. Everybody is going to stumble over them in the dark. This is a nightmare. Lily became agitated again. We'll take that into account. Stop worrying. You're worrying. Wisps hate worrying. Sister Therese tried to calm her down.
Right.
One more thing's for the wisps to hate. Shocker. Lily couldn't help herself.
Purple. Said. Wisp. Hottie. Lily. Not. Listen.
The immortals jumped on their favorite subject immediately.
Lily. Made. Own. Bed. They continued. Purple. Offer. Make. Lily. Boy. Just. Like. Human. No. Difference. Lily. Stubborn.
Could you please not get started on this again? I have enough noise in my head already. Lily snapped.
Purple. Help. Purple. Love. Lily. Purple. Want. Lily. Happy.
The immortals changed their tone.
Tell. Purple. What. Lily. Need. Purple. Make.
I will, if we need anything.
Thank you.
Lily replied. Landing Bay, Terra 2, July 12, 3245.
Dear Lelia.
When I was a child everybody was charmed by my beautiful singing voice. My parents beamed with pride when they heard me perform at the local community theater, usually during the holidays. I had a wonderful gift, they said, a very special talent that I shouldn't waste. I didn't like to perform. It didn't feel right to me. I'd get this hollow feeling in my stomach every time I stood in front of an audience, but I was getting better at it every day. My teachers helped me cultivate my voice. I learned correct breathing, sound modulation, and the importance of good posture. Between my schoolwork and my singing lessons, life was pretty hectic, and my parents dedicated theirs to help bring out what they considered to be my astounding talent. With steadfast effort and lots of training and support from my teachers, I was admitted to the conservatory in Cape Town, and everyone was overjoyed by my achievement. My parents basked in the glow of compliments from all their friends and acquaintances for months, so pleased to have been blessed with a music prodigy in the family and so gratified to have had the means to promote my talent. Conservatory was hard and I felt lonely, away from my parents, friends, and the large social circle that usually surrounded our family. My parents were companionable people and I can't remember a single second during my entire childhood when I was all by myself. It was easy, in a way, not having to worry about what to do next, because the future was displayed in front of my starry eyes in vivid clarity. I was to finish conservatory and become a mezzo-soprano, hopefully of some renown if I worked hard enough at it. At some point during the second year of music school, I found myself the proud owner of a fancy diary. A friend gave it to me when he came to visit because he thought that putting pen to paper might help alleviate some of the pressure that came with such a stringent schedule and the angst of being away from my loved ones. I was surprised by my friend's gift, but thanked him nevertheless. Neither one of us ever pictured me as a person with a diary. I've always been an introvert and putting my private thoughts on paper felt like strolling undressed in public. Funny how the interlinked bracelets made this mental torment a constant reality, huh? Anyhow, I loved the diary, a flawless, sleek tome bound in printed leather, so beautifully crafted that it felt special, superior somehow to the rest of the mundane objects that surrounded my life, and for this reason I didn't dare touch the immaculate pages. Every day, when I had a free moment, the diary beckoned, almost daring me to open it and write something, anything, but I cherished it too much and didn't want to mess it up. One morning one of my peers needed a pen and a pad of paper to jot down quickly a phone number or an address or a shopping list. I don't even remember. She grabbed my immaculate journal, white as untouched snow, and scribbled her notes on its first page, pressing down really hard and telegraphing the pen indentations several sheets deep. I was in shock, accustomed as I'd become to the thought that my beautiful diary was a sculptural piece of sorts, a work complete in and of itself which could only be disfigured by undeserving scribbles. The first page was ripped carelessly, leaving behind unsightly tears, and my fingers lingered sadly over the pen indentations with the caution one uses to touch a recent scar. I couldn't decide whether to be sad or angry, neither felt right, so I opened the diary and wrote my first poem instead. I didn't think about it, I didn't carefully compose it, it just appeared, fully formed, at the tip of my fingers, the first of many, the essence of my soul, my gift to express. It was crude and somewhat childish, the writing of a person without literary sophistication, but it rang true and made me feel alive. I don't know where it came from, suddenly, or why of all literary forms I chose the verse, but I never stopped writing since. I wrote when I was happy, I wrote when I was sad, I wrote when there was a story I wanted to recount, and my beautiful journal was followed by many more. In time the stories started seeking me out, quietly, like scaredy cats trying to assess if I'm their friend or foe, and then, their worries eased, laid gently under my fingers, happy to be told. I wrote about the placid ostriches grazing on the windswept cliffs that edged the ocean and about the stadium in Cape Town, a giant donut that dominated the city and made the boat docks look smaller than toys. I wrote about the sheltered gulfs that trim the peninsula with openwork embroidery and about the sunshine pouring through wide green canyons like firewater. I wrote about the silhouettes of the giraffes projecting on the amber sky at sunset and about the roars of the lions at night. Most of all, I wrote about people. I welcomed their stories of courage and wisdom, of overcoming adversity and amazing fortune. Some of the stories were true, some received the benefit of poetic license, and much like the wonderful world that we created here, it became harder and harder to remember which was what. Their collective meaning became another reality, intricately connected to this one, but brighter and more vivid, a world of aspirations and ideals eagerly waiting on the brink of existence to pass into reality. Our adventures here have surpassed any literary work I could ever dream up, but then again this handmade world of ours, Terra 2, is not just another place in the universe, it is an embodiment of the best humanity has to offer. I love this world, you see, with all my heart and soul, this world that looks so small and fragile from space, surrounded by its wobbly titanium ring, this world which blossomed right under my eyes, turning desert into paradise. If there is one constant in my experience, and I hesitate to recall exactly how far back that experience goes, it is life's uncanny ability to reinvent itself by reframing contexts and events. You look at something you thought you already knew and suddenly see it in a completely different light, wondering why you never noticed it before. I remained an adept singer and I still perform, on occasion, in one of the auditoria of our surprisingly roomy institute, but there is something about writing that brings out the best in me, it gives me joy. As we advance in wisdom, joy is a prized commodity we can't afford to miss, so find the expression of your soul in whatever form it may come, and lend it your voice. Time passes and things change, but you can't unwrite a poem, or unsing a song, they are the untarnished part of you that remains after you sift out the daily grind. Of course you're wondering what is a conservatory graduate doing terraforming a planet, but that is a strange explanation I will give you some other time. What I wanted to say now is that God gifts us with talents, some obvious, some carefully hidden. You have to honor both, my dear, and cultivate them whether or not you have an audience, because they weren't given you to make you shine, you're but a custodian of a small portion of the grace God poured into this world. Love, always Sister Therese.